And eventually, Lewis invited Peter to come to his rooms at Magdalen College, Oxford. And they met and they struck up a warm friendship.
I'm William O'Flaherty. Welcome to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. All About Jack is also part of the Theology Mix podcast network. And today is more of a typical show. That is, I have a book author as guest. It's someone who is no stranger if you've listened to the program often. Dr. Don King from Montreat College is back. This time he is sharing about a book called Hunting the Unicorn, a critical biography on Ruth Pitter. However, instead of me in the role of host, I've asked Dr. Crystal Hurd to take the reins, and so I get to focus on directing and producing the show. As you know, Ruth Pitter was a close friend of C.S. Lewis, but did you also know that she... Well, I'll let you find out more about that from Crystal and Don. So I'll let Crystal now take it away and introduce Don more formally.
Well, thank you so much, William, for having us back on All About Jack. I'm Crystal Hurd, and I'm actually here today to interview Don W. King about his research on Ruth Pitter. A lot of you may know Don from some of the excellent work he's done with Lewis's poet. He recently released a book of poetry, of Lewis's poetry that he edited. He's also written a book on Lewis's poetry, and he's done some work with Ruth Pitter. I'm going to talk to Don a little bit about Ruth and how she is a substantial character for Lewis and how their relationship evolved. If you do have a copy of the Women in C.S. Lewis book, Don actually contributed a chapter on Ruth Pitter for that book. So we are so excited to have you, Don.
Well, it's a real welcome to be with you, Crystal, and back on All About Jack.
I know a lot of folks may not know much about Ruth, so can you provide us with a brief biography to sort of introduce her to some of the listeners?
Sure. Ruth was born 1897. She was born in one of the East London or East Ends of London, one of the East End London suburbs. Her family, she had a sister and a brother. She was the oldest. Her parents were what we would call elementary school teachers. So she spent the first part of her life kind of living in that Cockney section of London. She had an early gift for poetry. Her first poem was published when she was 13 years old in a socialist, very progressive socialist publication, The New Age. Probably the most important thing in terms of her development as a poet was the fact that her parents, when she was a teenager, they rented an old cottage in Hainault Forest on the outskirts of London in Essex. And the forest and the cottage became important catalysts for many of her later poems. Eventually, she began working for a company that was really what I guess we would call today a decorative furniture company. She was gifted as an artisan, so she would end up doing various kinds of paintings on furniture. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that company moved to London, and in the late 20s, Ruth Pitter and a friend, a woman named Kathleen O'Hara, they became business partners, and they opened their own business again, painting decorative furniture. Through the 30s, they were very successful in their small business. They lived in the Chelsea area of London, what we would call the arts and crafts part of London. She met many other poets and artists and writers, including Eric Blair, who we know today as George Orwell. In fact, Eric Blair or George Orwell dated, I guess we would say, dated Ruth Pitter today, although in a kind of odd way. She was befriended and encouraged by a number of important writers of the day, including Hilaire Belloc. And her first volumes of poetry were published in the 20s. But she really hits her stride as a poet in around 1930, when she temporarily loses her eyesight as a result of an accident. Anyway, she was opening a can of paint, and because of the pressure inside of the paint, it exploded. And for a while, she thought she was going to be blind in one eye. During this time period, when she was relatively inactive, I think the seeds of her poetic maturation really took force, because she began to go back in her memories, and she began to write poems based not on immediate visual experiences, but more on her memories and her recollections. And so from the early 1930s on, that's when her best poetry is published. Her volume of poetry, A Trophy of Arms, published in 1936, actually won a prestigious poetry award, the Hawthornden Prize. And then she had a couple of World War II volumes, The Bridge, published in 1945, which I think is when she's really reaching sort of the pinnacle of her mature work. And then in 1953, probably her best volume, The Ermine, that won the William Heinemann Award, and she also was awarded the gold medal, the Queen's gold medal for poetry. She continued to write poetry until she was in her 80s. She published several other volumes.
Very interesting. Now, Don, you mentioned in Hunting the Unicorn, which is the biography that you wrote, that the Queen herself insisted on giving Pitter that award. Is that correct?
Right. Pitter was the first woman to win the award, and so the Queen did insist on giving it to her personally. And when Pitter writes about that, she uses the language of it was like a fairy tale. Hmm. I don't think we Americans can necessarily appreciate the affection that many British people had, particularly that generation, for the royal family. Mm-hmm. And so for Pitter to have that experience, it was something that, as she said, was sort of like a fairy tale.
Ooh, that is interesting. Now, let's talk for just a second about sort of your investment in her work. What was the connection with Lewis? What sort of initiated your interest in pursuing her scholarship?
It sure was. When I was finishing research on my book, C.S. Lewis Poet, I came across correspondence between Lewis and Pitter. I had not heard of Pitter before then. And the reason the correspondence was so interesting to me is because Pitter had written Lewis and asked if she could rewrite the ending of Perelandra, the second book in the Ransom trilogy, and turned the last several pages into Spenserian stanzas. That caught my eye because the thesis of my book on Lewis as a poet is that his best poetry is actually found in his prose. Mm-hmm. So when I came across that correspondence, of course, I wanted to find those transcriptions. And I'll make a long story short, but eventually I did find the transcriptions in the Bodleian when I was doing research. And I actually included Ruth Pitter's transcriptions into poetry of the end of Perelandra in one of the appendices of C.S. Lewis Poet. So if anybody's interested, they could take a look at that. And it is sort of fascinating to look at Lewis's prose and then see what Pitter did with the Spenserian stanzas.
Very interesting. So now that we're talking about this connection, how did Pitter and Lewis actually meet?
Now, they had a common friend, a man named Herbert Palmer, and during one of Herbert Palmer's visits with Lewis, he mentioned Ruth Pitter's poetry. Lewis had not been familiar with Pitter before then, but when Palmer shared with Lewis some of her poems, Lewis got more interested. Now, Palmer told Pitter about the conversations that he'd been having with Lewis, and it was clear that Lewis was interested in Pitter's poetry and would like to meet. And eventually, Lewis invited Pitter to come to his rooms at Magdalen College, Oxford. And they met and they struck up a warm friendship. I think the main thing that they had in common, of course, was poetry. And also their particular interest in what I would call sort of traditional British poetry. In the 1930s and 40s and 50s, we're really talking about literary modernism. And Lewis was not a modernist in terms of his interest in poetry, nor was Pitter. So I think that shared vision of what made great poetry is what brought the two together.
Which was interesting because, as you mentioned, she published at 13.
Right.
And some of the the letters, not just in the letters that you edited, which you have published as well, is Ruth's letters. But you mentioned in Hunting the Unicorn that Ruth was kind of she was kind of a mentor in a way. I mean, well, not a mentor.
I think she was close to being a mentor to mm-hmm. Lewis as a poet. And many letters he would write hit her, and he would send her drafts, several drafts of the same poem. Mm-hmm. And he would ask her to sort of vet the poems, which is the best version and so forth. Mm-hmm. And of course, she was delighted to do that.
I felt like her letters, and this is when I'm reading him, her letters are excellent. I mean, they're excellent advice on writing poetry and creating good art. I personally found them satisfying and informational, you know, even though she's talking to Lewis and she's corresponding with Lewis. I think anybody who likes to create art would find something really valuable in her advice.
Well, and I think her advice is very accessible to, let's say, the non-scholar. Mm-hmm. Ruth, I didn't mention this before, but Ruth Pitter, coming from that part of London that we would probably call today the poorer part of London, she never had the opportunity to go to university. Mm-hmm. So she was very much self-taught. And I think maybe that fact was something that sort of fascinated Lewis, the fact that she hadn't come through the sort of educational and academic tradition that he had, and yet she was writing the kind of poetry that really resonated with Lewis.
That's really interesting. Now, Pitter did believe, and you've mentioned this earlier, but she believed that Lewis's prose was actually better than her poetry. She mentions it in you quote her in saying that. It says, now, since you've written a book on Lewis's poetry, and you've recently edited a book of his poetry, right? So having studied both Pitter and Lewis, and you mentioned to me that you are actually releasing some poetry by Pitter next year, right? So what are your thoughts on Pitter's assessment of Lewis's verse?
Well, I think that I think Pitter found much to admire in Lewis's poetry, but I think that the way she would probably put it is that perhaps his great academic learning and his great background in terms of literary knowledge, in one sense, may have been sort of a stop to the free flow of poetry. And we all know who've read about Lewis's desire to be a poet as a young man. We all know how hard he worked at that, and he strived to be a great poet. It really wasn't until he gave up the vision of being a poet that his prose began to flow out of his pen, and he became this incredible prose writer that so many of us love. So I think he was sort of hampered, at least Pitter's argument would have been that he was somewhat hampered by his great learning. He was, in some sense, perhaps more interested in the craft of poetry and in the writing of poetry. And his imagination, unlike in his prose, his imagination, in one sense, was not as facile in his poetry when we compare it to his prose. So I think that would probably be the main critique that she would have given to Lewis's poetry.
But I think I agree with her. Lewis just seems like it. For Lewis, poetry is more loaded. There's a lot more. He's thinking, like you said, along a traditional line of this long history. This long tradition.
Perhaps another way to put it is sometimes, not exclusively, certainly, but sometimes Lewis's poetry is more rhetorical. Mm-hmm. In other words, he's making an argument. Sometimes poetry works nicely with that rhetorical focus. But oftentimes when we read poetry, we're not necessarily looking for an argument, but we're looking for the exercise of the imagination. Certainly Lewis's imagination is everywhere present in his work. But sometimes in his poetry, it seems to be forced. And so not in all of his poems, but oftentimes I think his poetry doesn't reflect the power of his imaginations, certainly not in the way he would have hoped.
Very interesting. So getting back to Ruth, she was actually a very popular figure in England during her lifetime. Now, you mentioned in Chapter 9 of Hunting the Unicorn that she wrote and she spoke on a variety of topics, including some periodicals and some shows for the BBC, right? So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think listeners would be interested to know that she appeared on, I guess, what we would call today one of the first talking heads kinds of programs. This was the BBC program, the Brain Trust. And the Brain Trust was basically a panel, usually three or four people, and there would be an MC, and the MC would read questions that listeners had sent in during the week. And then the three panelists would respond. And Pitter was paired up with some very interesting people. At least in one case, she was on the panel with Julian Huxley, the biologist, and A.J. Ayer, the logical positivist, and also John Betjeman, who was the poet laureate. So, and oftentimes she would receive letters after these events in which people would say the equivalent of, you sort of mop the floor with those chaps. So she was pretty popular. I could just give you one example. She was debating the question or the notion of the idea of the doctrine of original sin. And Ayer, the logical positivist, who was an atheist, he said, "For how much that is evil can you sincerely hold yourself personally responsible?" And Pitter said, "I take refuge in the words of John Donne, 'No man is an island.' And for the 20th century, we can't contract out of it." And Ayer says, "But you hold yourself guilty for these things?" And Pitter said, "I hold myself guilty, but I should not be prostrate under that guilt because I have hope. While the three Christian virtues are faith, hope, and charity, any proposition which is without all three has a fundamental unsoundness to my way of thinking." So I sort of admire Pitter, again, not university educated, for her willingness to take on some pretty heavy thinkers at the time and hold her own.
Now, you mentioned in the book that Lewis kind of played a role in her conversion to Christianity. Is that correct?
Very much so. When she was working in a munitions factory during World War II, she had to go across the Battersea Bridge, and one dark evening in March when it was very cold, she stood at the bridge and really contemplated suicide. And in fact, just a week before that, someone had jumped from the bridge and committed suicide. But shortly after that, she heard one of Lewis's radio broadcasts that later became a part of Mere Christianity. And that broadcast became the catalyst for her movement towards Christian faith. So she admired Lewis not only as a writer, but in many ways we would have to say he was something of a spiritual mentor to her.
So he was breeding apologists already, and he had a very formidable ally in Ruth Pitter.
Yes.
Now, speaking of Hunting the Unicorn, it's a fascinating, fascinating work. You mentioned a first and last meeting between Ruth and the future Mrs. Lewis, Joy Davidman. Now, can we talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Pitter and her colleague, O'Hara, had decided to leave London and retire, so they bought a little cottage in a village near Oxford, a place called Long Crendon, in part because they wanted to get out of the city, also in part because Pitter had another common friend, this time with Lewis, and that was Lord David Cecil, and he lived near Long Crendon as well. But it's clear that she moved to Long Crendon because she imagined that there might be more meetings between herself and Lewis. Lewis, about the time Pitter moves to Long Crendon, he's begun his relationship with Joy Davidman. And so Lewis, being the somewhat naive man that I think he was, he thought, well, wouldn't it be a great idea to invite Ruth and Joy to a luncheon together? We'll just have a jolly good time. Well, Pitter had very little to say about that meeting in her journal. She wrote, "I met Mrs. Gresham today for the first and last time." So two women did not warm to one another.
Interesting. Well, thanks, Don. I think if our listeners would love to read more about this and some other really interesting stuff that you've alluded to with Ruth's life and work, again, please go out and purchase Hunting the Unicorn. It's a great, great biography. Lots of interesting and fascinating information in there. So speaking of Ruth and her works, if I were interested in Pitter, like, where would I begin? Like, which works do you feel are critical to her artistic legacy?
Sure. Next year, I'll be publishing her collected poems. And so listeners could pick up that volume. The title of the volume is Sudden Heaven, The Collected Poems of Ruth Pitter. And within that volume, I would suggest that readers try these four groupings of poems: A Trophy of Arms, published in 1936, The Spirit Watches, published in 1939, The Bridge, published in 1945, and The Ermine, published in 1953. The strength of Ruth Pitter's work, I think, is best reflected in those four individual volumes. But again, they'll all be a part of the collected poems.
Now, for those of you, I like to read and write poetry myself, and I know a lot of folks do that are listening. Can you sort of give us a sample of some of Ruth's work?
Yeah, this poem entitled "If You Came" is a poem that I think we would classify it as a love poem, but there's a certain distance in the poem that I think is quite fascinating. So I'll read this. "If you came to my secret glade, weary with heat, I would set you down in the shade, I would wash your feet. If you came in the winter sad, wanting for bread, I would give you the last that I had, I would give you my bed. But the place is hidden apart, like a nest by a brook, and I will not show you my heart by a word, by a look. The place is hidden apart, like the nest of a bird, and I will not show you my heart by a look, by a word." And I think in that poem, Pitter is suggesting, for herself at least, finding the secret to her heart is not something that's going to happen very easily. She's a woman who would have had to be pursued. And unfortunately, I know that this is going to sound somewhat sexist, unfortunately, I think most men don't really know how to find that hidden place in a woman's heart. What do you think, Crystal?
Yes, I would agree. Women are complex creatures, for sure. But, you know, Don, when you were reading that poem, it kind of reminded me of some very similar things that Joy Davidman had written for Lewis in the Love Sonnets, which you also edited Joy's Love Sonnets last year. And you can talk about that a little bit, but you know, it's really uncanny. Sort of the longing and the tone are very, very similar from both women. And here, you know, here we have two women who are poets that seem to show some interest in Lewis. That's such an interesting concept there.
Yeah, I think you've made the point. I'm not sure I could add much to it, but readers would really enjoy, I think, reading Pitter's poetry side by side with Joy Davidman's poetry. And I think that they would probably pick up on the fact that Pitter was much more reserved in terms of her feelings and her approach to love, whereas Joy was much more aggressive and much more willing to let the person know that she cared about, that she had these very strong feelings.
Well, it's very interesting. Now, just so listeners, just so you all know, the name of that book of David Mann's poetry that Don edited is A Naked Tree. And you guys can pick that up. And Don, do you know when the Pitter poetry will be available?
Well, the manuscript is at the publisher, and I'm guessing probably sometime in 2017.
Excellent. Well, Don, thank you so much for taking some time to be on All About Jack and talk about Ruth and Lewis and all this interesting stuff. And we look forward to the research and the scholarship you continue to do in this area.
Thank you, Crystal. It's my pleasure.
I'm William O'Flaherty, and I appreciate Dr. Crystal Hurd helping me out by conducting this interview. As you may know, Crystal also contributed to the Women in C.S. Lewis book that she mentioned during the interview, and she posts a variety of content generally about C.S. Lewis at her website, crystalhurd.com. There are links to her site and that book in the show notes. You've been listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. All About Jack is also part of the Theology Mix podcast network. I hope you enjoyed the show and will consider sharing it with others. I made reference to the show notes a moment ago. That is where you can also find a direct link to purchase Don's biography on Ruth Pitter entitled Hunting the Unicorn. You can also find a link to Don's faculty page that details his other books, and most of them I've actually spoken with him about on other shows. Those show notes can be found either at EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The Podbean location is where the podcast is most easily found and navigated. Again, that's AllAboutJack.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. The other location, EssentialCSLewis.com, highlights the most recent show on the main page and also has space dedicated to listing past shows and the notes for them. Additionally, you can find a variety of other material on Lewis there, including a popular series exploring quotations attributed to him that may not be from him. At the time this podcast is first posted, I've recently been posting some videos from the Inklings Week in Oxford from summer 2016. So far, I've shared talks from Hal Poe and Colin Duryea. Plus, I also did an audio podcast from the one-on-one interview I did with Walter Hooper at his home while I was at the conference there. So be sure to consider checking out those, which we'll have links in the show notes too. In addition to those new shows, I occasionally post previously released podcasts on my iTunes feed that you can also find at the Podbean address. If you don't know how to find the show on iTunes, then be sure to check the show notes for a direct link. Again, those notes can be found either at EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. If you do visit me via iTunes, please consider rating my podcast, as this can help others find it. Finally, let me remind you, or in case you didn't know, I have a book called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, A Companion and Study Guide to the Screwtape Letters. It is available online at Amazon. The paperback is $14.99, and presently the Kindle version is just $5.49. You can learn more about that book by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page sample of the book if you'd like. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Thanks again for listening to All About Jack.